this person.
All right, why don't we get started? This is, again, the session on observers. And welcome. My name is Brian Shin. I am Assistant General Counsel in the Secretary of State's office, and I am one of the elections attorneys for Secretary Bruner. Thank you all for coming. We've already passed out the agenda with the three questions that are meant to spark conversation in this topic on observers. And I also have the sign-in sheet going around. If you could please make sure that makes it around, I would appreciate it. Why don't I introduce the panel now, and what I would like the panel to do is to give just a few introductory remarks, and then we'll kind of work through these questions, and then we'll open up for discussion. And again, the topic is observers. So why don't we, I'll start on the end with Dora Rose. Dora Rose was the head of voter protection with the Ohio Democratic Party through the last election cycle, and Dora's been involved in election issues for many years. Dora is an attorney admitted in the state of Ohio. She went to
Michigan.
Well, we won't mention that. But
go blue.
Watch it.
There's so many reasons for people to attack me today.
But Dora lives up in Cleveland and has been splitting her time over the last year or so between Cleveland and Columbus. And next we have Linda Howe, who is the director of the Lucas County Board of Elections. Linda has extensive elections experience prior to becoming director. She had been director in, forgive me, Linda,
Henry
County, and then on the board on Henry County for several years before taking on this responsibility of Lucas County just before the general election. Yeah. And God love her for doing that. Finally, not last but certainly not least, we have Pearl Chin, who is an assistant attorney general in the Constitutional Offices section. Pearl has the pleasure of being one of the attorneys who represents the Secretary of State's office, among other clients, in the Attorney General's office. So thank all of you for agreeing to participate. And why don't we start with some opening remarks, and I'll turn it over to Dora, please.
Well, I organized observers in Cuyahoga County in both 2004 and in 2006. I trained them, developed training materials, and in its wisdom, the Ohio Democratic Party decided to hire me in 2008 to bring the program statewide. And judging from some of the remarks yesterday, I recognize that this means that many of you want to have my head. But here's the thing. Observers guarantee that our elections are going to be open and transparent, right? They're part of that process. They give the public confidence in the elections, and the confidence that the public has in its elections makes the public participate more. That's something that we all want. That's a good thing. And it's actually, I believe, really critical to the health of our democracy. Observers are insiders in this process. They're not interlopers. They have to take the same kind of oath, a very similar oath to the one that the poll workers take. They are responsible not to interfere with elections. They have the freedom to move around in order to be able to witness everything related to the casting, the processing, and the counting of the ballots. And they have the right to speak to elections officials and to raise problems where they think that problems, to bring to light problems where they think that they perceive those problems to be. They are, you know, I know that many of you have horror stories about observers, and I know that observers do not always follow the training that I have laid out for them, and sometimes deviate. There are certainly problem observers. And I'll tell you something, and if Eleanor were here, she'd attest to this fact, will remove observers even for the slightest infraction, even ones that don't raise to the level that one would have to remove an observer for, because I want to make sure that they do not impede the good functioning of an election. In my observer structure, I try to be very, very careful about that. But for every horror story that you have about observers, there are 10 stories that I can give you where observers have been absolutely integral to making sure that problems are corrected, to finding that problems are existing in the administration of the election and making sure that they're corrected. So for example, where a voter is being denied a regular ballot because their driver's license has an old address, the observer will report that in and get that corrected, and the poll worker will fix that problem for the rest of the day. Where a poll worker gives out provisional ballots without checking to make sure that that voter is in the correct precinct, an observer will recognize that problem, call it in, and make sure that that problem is corrected. So observers, in my mind, they prevent mistakes, they save votes, they avoid unnecessary provisional voting where the provisional voting should not have be occurring, and that's a good thing. On the balance, I believe that observers help the process a whole lot more than they hurt it. And you know, the truth is that in my mind, and I also brought this to the observer program that I managed, poll workers are a whole lot more important than observers. And we took hundreds of the observers that we had from 2006, and we converted them. We pushed them into poll worker roles. We told them, apply as poll workers. If you can take that full day, be a poll worker. That's a lot more important than your role as an observer. Despite the fact that I think that observers are critical to the healthy functioning of a democracy, I think that poll workers are even more important. And so I especially think that the lawyers that we recruit, the ones who are super trained and really well educated on issues of voter ID and provisional balloting, they should be poll workers, and that was part of our program as well. And, you know, finally, I do want to thank you, because I've worked with many of you. I've been on the phone with many of you, and the attorneys who are in charge in the counties of our programs have worked very closely with election administrators, and you guys have been a pleasure to work with. And I was actually surprised by some of the sense of hostility I was hearing yesterday about observers, because I thought that we really had developed a good working relationship. You guys are on the front lines of a profession where the laws are constantly changing, the rules are constantly changing, your technology is constantly changing. It is the hardest job in the world, and I'll tell you, there's nothing that gives a voting rights activist more respect for election administrators than being in the trenches with you. So I know what you do, and I know how hard you work, and I think that we can come together to achieve the same goals, which are essentially the smooth functioning of elections in Ohio and ensuring that elections are free, fair, and open. That, to me, is the crux of the observer program. It's the crux of what you're doing, and I'm hoping that today we can come up with some ideas that will help us work together. I want to hear your criticisms. I want the observer programs that we run to be better. I want to hear the input, and I want to be able to continue working together constructively.
Thank you, Dora. Linda?
Hopefully I won't ramble on too much.
Like I did.
No, you're very organized with your thoughts. I started in Lucas County on July 21st. And prior to that, as Brian said, I was on the board this last time at Henry County. Henry County is a small county, like 45, where I lived at that point was 45 minutes southwest of Toledo. I moved to Lucas County to take the position. However, in Henry County, we didn't have observers very often show up, you know. I think in talking to Sandy and Grace, they had one person this year. So it wasn't anything, you know, we used to hear about observers and think, oh dear, what, you know. But they never came. But in Lucas County, we had a lot of scrutiny. We still do every day. The local newspaper writes about us probably 3 times a week. They dig up something. There's always political controversy for whatever reason, and so the current situation is somebody's always looking for something to go wrong. So we started, and we naturally wanted to have good poll workers, and that's always a problem, you know, trying to find poll workers. In a small county, we never had a poll worker just not show up election day. They called and said they were sick. In our county, they could, for whatever reason, decide, I'm not going that day. Just don't show, don't call, nothing. So, you know, we concentrate on that, and then we're getting all these people filing. They wanted to be observers at our early vote center. And it was before it was allowed that we were allowed to have them. And so our board decided at that point that if we said you this certain group couldn't be observers, it would wave a red flag that we're hiding something. So our board went ahead and made their own rules for observers at early voting. And we started it, and then they went back to court, and then the laws, the observer laws went back to what they were on election day. But we continued to follow ours. And I will say the observers at early voting were great. You know, we had them from two political parties and an issue group. No, there were two political parties. Maybe there was a third that came one day. But what they did was they filed the list at the board, and we had the list at the early vote center. And as the people came in, the person in charge of the early vote center swore them in. We kept track. We allowed them to substitute during the day because, frankly, you know, for a lot of cases, they were young attorneys or a housewife or, you know, someone who was a volunteer for the political campaign, and they couldn't sit there all day. And so we allowed them to change. The second one would come in, and we'd cross off. And, you know, it got so we knew him. One young man brought the poll workers donuts the first day. He wanted to make sure he was in good shape there. But, you know, I provided a room for them to go for their break because we didn't allow them to sit and drink their pop and coffee and all that. And it seemed to go well. Now, in the past, the observers have been treated like they're the plague. You know, you had so many feet, they were allowed to be here and there, and they couldn't go talk to anyone. And I said, look, according to the law, they're allowed to walk around and talk. Now, if you find they're interfering, you have the right. And so that we continued that for election day. And like all of us, you bust your butt to train these poll workers, and you have good poll workers, and you have poll workers you think, couldn't you have at least opened the book? You know, in the same way with observers. I think for the most part, they were trained with the proper way to behave. Did all of them do it? No. However, I kept getting phone calls during the day, and I knew in advance we were going to get a lot of communication, and they told me they had in the past. So we had a woman who was a retired Republican director, and she sat in my office at a table with a cell phone, and I had a Democrat, someone who had a lot of election experience, and she sat at the other side of the table with a cell phone. They had a list of the polling places, a list of the troubleshooters, and they fielded the observer calls all day. The observer groups were given those phone numbers. And it took the load of the calls off of our staff because they didn't have time to deal with that. So the main call that we got all day was the driver's license thing. And you know, those instructions were highlighted. And then I started getting calls from Columbus, from the Secretary of State's office. Do you know this is a problem? I said, yes. And then I got calls from a political party. Your poll workers are allowing, you know, making these people vote provisional. One particular precinct, the observer called me, and I had worked with him before. And he said, Linda, you've really got a problem with this precinct. He said, I know I'm not supposed to interfere, but this woman is just not letting anybody vote. She's making a vote provisional. He said, I'm so frustrated. I said, I've already sent the troubleshooter there. He said, I saw him come, but she's still doing it. So to make a long story, I called the lady, and I went through the whole law. Well, I have my training. I said, right, turn to page 5 and number 14, and we read it, and she said, you mean they can still vote? Yes. And who are you? You know, and we went through it again. And I swear she did it again. Now, is she going to be a poll worker next time? Not if I can help it. But, you know, what I'm trying to say is I try to understand the other side. They're doing their job. Whether we agree that it's necessary or not, that's not up to us. But I think that we all work hard to train our people. I'm sure Dora worked hard to train hers. And their law does allow presiding judges to tell them to leave, and we had some presiding judges that did that. One of them probably not right, but she had the power and she did it. So maybe we could work together and come up with something so that the voters aren't interfered with. You know, if you have one or two poll workers or observers, it's not an issue, but if you would have five and they all want to watch somebody sign in a book, it becomes interference. That's it.
Thank you. Pearl?
Sorry. Good Good morning. My name is Pearl Chin, and as Brian mentioned earlier, I'm an assistant attorney general with the Office of the Ohio Attorney General, and I do have the pleasure and privilege of representing the Secretary of State. The context in which I represent the Secretary is when there is litigation involved. I appear on behalf of her and her office when in court. I also am part of a great team of lawyers at the Attorney General's office, and we had a great relationship with the Secretary of State's office and working together and communicating together. So the context, that gives you some context on what I, why I'm here. I do want to start with a disclaimer that I will do my best to address questions about what the law currently says about this particular subject area, but I can't really opine as to, for instance, prospective questions about the constitutionality of certain provisions that are in the bill, for instance, Senate Bill 8, or things that might be the subject of future litigation. But I can, between Brian and me, we can talk about things that are the subject or, that have actually been set forth in court opinions or what directives actually say and what the revised code says too. I assume that most of you in this room know because of your experience in elections administration or because of your experience as an observer that the most recent relevant court opinion came out of the Ohio Supreme Court on observers. It was called State Ex-Rel Stokes v. Brunner. And in that opinion, the court ruled that observers would need to be allowed to be present at all polling locations, which includes early absentee voting. And so I'm sure that you are all aware of that, but that's just to frame the discussion of that our discussion today will probably include, of course, discussion of observers being present during that time period.
Thank you, Pearl. And if you all will indulge me, since I had a lot of experience dealing with these issues, I'm just going to offer a few comments, too, from the Secretary of State's perspective. I want to publicly commend Dora for the work that she did, not necessarily in terms of the work that she did for the party, but at least the work that she did in trying to herd the cats and to try to develop a channel of communications with our office that allowed us to have a recognized person. And I think that that was very helpful. We weren't being plagued with a million phone calls from a million different people complaining about the same issue over and over. As you can imagine, on election day, you get those calls from us saying, we hear an issue has arisen in X precinct, or that we're consistently hearing problems in X precinct. By ODP at least putting a point person, it made it a lot easier to facilitate communication. If we were hearing of problems from the boards, oh my God, the observers in such and such precincts are out of control, then we at least had a point person to go back to and to raise those issues. So it was very helpful for us to have that mutual point of contact, and I would hope that in the future that the people who are able to appoint observers, whether it's political parties, groups of five or more candidates, or ballot issues, would do something similar, because it's to everyone's benefit to have clear lines of communication. So I do want to thank Dora for that. It was very helpful. And I'm sure to those of you who called us or received a call from us, it did help facilitate the process. The only other comment I want to make in terms of the law, Pearl talked about the Stokes case, and the Stokes case is a good example of you think a statute says one thing, and lo and behold, a majority, or in this case, out of the seven justices of the Ohio Supreme Court, I think it was a 4-3 decision, which, 4-3 could have gone the other way, shows that, it's always interesting in elections. The law could be one thing one day and another thing another. And, it's a good example of us as elections officials having to roll with the punches and to adapt and move forward. Thankfully, that came relatively early in the process and wasn't one of those last-minute changes that you had to inform your poll workers of on election day. But that having been said, why don't we move on to the first question that was posed for this session, and that is observers during early voting. And, of course, that leads into the Stokes decision. One of the frustrations I personally had was that, yes, the Supreme Court allowed observers during early voting, but there were no standards in the law for how that was going to happen or when the filing deadline or anything was going to kick in, and that was frustrating from our end and probably from the Boards of Elections perspective. But that aside, how can we best implement Ohio law, or in this case, lack of Ohio law, concerning observers, including observers during the early voting process? And why don't we start with Dora again, if you don't mind.
Sure. I actually like Linda's system. I think that it's a really good model, what they had in Lucas County. And they had the same sort of model in Cuyahoga County as well, where they got a list of qualified people from which to... any one of whom could be an observer on any particular day, only one per appointing authority per day. But it saved the paperwork of having to come with a new form every day for that observer and all the signatures that are associated with that. So what we were able to do was make a list of people, get them properly appointed, give them all certificates of appointment that they would take with them on the day that they that it was their responsibility, and then they rotated through for that the period. It wasn't a full 35 days because of all the court decisions, but for the period of time when there was early voting, and I think that that's probably the most practical way to handle it, and I'd like to see the legislation changed. I don't know exactly how the legislation for appointments could be changed in general, but I got to tell you, it is very difficult to get all of the signatures that you need for all of the appointing authorities to all of the observers and also on all these certificates, and then amendments to that. And I don't know if there's an easier way that we could think about the whole issue of appointment in general, but in terms of early voting, I would, you know, I like Linda's model and the Cuyahoga County model, and Jane might want to talk about that too.
Linda?
When they first filed the lists at the board of the observers, one party just filed the same person's name for all of them in the precincts. But early voting, it worked out fairly well. After the first couple of days, you know, everybody was intense and the crowds were big, and it kind of mellowed down and it became an orderly process. But I think the lists worked well, and I hope that the legislators, when they do whatever they're going to do, at least come to the boards of elections and talk to them. It's like, I want to say, please don't help me anymore. Quit passing this stuff. You need to come to the boards and talk to them and actually see how the process works sometimes.
Are there any comments or questions from the group regarding the first question, observers during early voting? Anybody want to share their experiences if you were an observer or if you were a board who had to meet with this new requirement that you hadn't anticipated, at least in advance? Patty, do you want to come up and talk to the microphone?
My name's Patty Schaefer, and I'm the director of the Ohio Election Justice Campaign. And we had a combination of us in the Constitution Party of Ohio with Robert Owens as the chairman, and he was running for attorney general. And we had an election observer project in the fall of 2008. Off the top of my head, there's several things that we discovered that are important. One, we had a voting machine hopping in Franklin County, and Brian helped me get it removed. It took a while. They continued having people vote on the machine, even though the polling location was not busy. The man running the location refused to stop using it, even though he didn't even have lines. So we did get that machine pulled, and I appreciated the help out of the Secretary of State's office. That's one I need to follow up on. Did the machine ever get looked at? And I'm hoping that they looked at what was going on with it. Another item was in Lucas County, we had an observer there who went to polling location, and he had wanted, some of the things that I'd asked them to get were the serial numbers off the voting machines. And he had a poll worker there who he got the numbers off all the machines except one, and the poll worker was very hostile to him. the trying to get that information went on all day. I know he called the Board of Elections, and as far as I know, it never was resolved, and I was just thinking about it here and talking about it, that I need to contact him and see if he ever did get it. So for the election officials, it's one of those things. I know of no reason why an observer would not be able to get the serial numbers. And I think rather than the machine off of memory, it was the memory cartridge for it. And I'll have to go back to my notes on that. But I see of no reason why an observer can't just collect that data. And so that's something I hope all of you can help us with. Another item was Delaware County and the usage of the young teenagers coming in and assisting with running the polls. I had a poll worker there who called me, and she was very distressed, and enough so that I still have her message on my cell phone, and I'd love to make arrangements with the Secretary of State's office actually to bring her in and let her talk to you, because what she witnessed was disturbing. And what she called and told me was that the location she was in southern Delaware County was very, very busy. Lot of lines, and they had used the youth that were helping them at one central table in the middle of the room, and they had the poll books there or some kind of books there, and they were supposed to help figure out where people were supposed to go into which lines. And she was running the provisional ballot table. She said there was a huge number of people being forced to vote provisionally, and she had, and that was what was in the books, that she had to have them vote that way. There was nothing that would tell her why. When she'd call the Board of Elections, they couldn't tell her why. The people were upset they were voting that way. She was the one who had to give them the ballot, and she was very frustrated because she couldn't give them a reason why. And they had, many of these people had voted in the primary and had no problem. And so why is this happening? Middle of the day, she noticed that there were a whole lot of people walking around the room with provisional ballots to vote on them that she had not given to them. And she was wondering, how did they get those? Because she was the person handing them out. And she walked around and looked, and what she found was someone had handed a stack of provisional ballots to those young teenagers that were supposed to sort people into lines, and they were passing them out to voters. This is, like, really wrong. So off the top of my head, there's a couple stories, and at some point with the Secretary of State's office, I'd actually like to sit down with my data from that day. There's a few other things, but one concern with bringing the youth in, if you had a place where you have a compromised situation, my concern from the beginning was they're kids and they wouldn't know what's right and what's wrong with it, and they'll do whatever you tell them, and I would never want them misused in such a way. The beautiful thing about bringing them in is we need poll workers, especially ones that are young, so we have a lifetime of having them participate, and I hope that everyone will truly value the use and no one would compromise them.
Thank you, Ms. Schaefer. Does anybody else want to share any comments
Can
or their experiences? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Linda.
Patty, I will look up that particular poll and see if I can find the serial number or see what happened that day. All right, thank you.
Thanks, Linda. Anybody else want to share experiences? I see Bill Buckle coming up to the mic.
Bill Buckle, Columbus, Ohio. But since the machine...
Can everybody hear Bill? Because
Since the machine, here we go.
You're a little taller than the mic, Bill.
Since the machine number is a public record, since the observer can get the time of day, and since the tracking tape is a public record, anybody can tell how they voted with that information. It's the price you pay for openness. But that may be why somebody was reluctant to hand out the machine number.
Okay. Any other comments? Thank you, Bill. Go ahead.
I'm Joanne Karasik, and I'm an election activist. I have observed in 2006 for the five-party candidates, and I have observed in 2008 for the Green Party. And although there were some small things that disturbed me in 2006, I was generally treated right, although held back from seeing and hearing, much less asking anybody anything. But I am seriously concerned about one county in Ohio, and in the 2008, they held me back from seeing and hearing. They had situations where, you know, there's supposed to be a Republican and Democrat observing each other on key operations for security. And chronically, they not only had a person working with the absentee ballots or the provisional ballots privately, but I couldn't get anywhere close to see anything. And obviously, I'm going to have no trust in the situation. And so it, right there, it makes the county look bad. And there were even more serious problems. There were three directives from the Secretary of State saying that you had to count the early voting and get it on the election night results, the unofficial canvas. And this county decided that they didn't have enough staff to do that, and so they dropped it, which in effect suppressed the vote for election night. And I went to the board about this, and the board has absolutely made no change, okay? Now, they don't understand this. First of all, my background is that I have roughly 30 years of legal experience, and I can read these documents from the directives and the statute and understand them, that I know the processes, I belong to organizations, that I can tell specifically what this particular county is doing. I have not done any of that because I'm trying to get this worked out peaceably for the May primary and on. But the board at this point wants to choose to listen to me because they want to do their way the same way they have done it. And it's the when I was pushing the director to be able to be close to the cards being played, put into the computer for the count, she had me sitting 20 feet from the machines. And I not only couldn't see them, I was lucky to see the cards. And as it turned out, one of the cards was mistakenly, and this was a one-party person, because that's the way it's set up, that person had mistakenly misunderstood and thought that one card that was given to him was supposed to be put in the damaged file, and it never got played into the election count. So they had no observer of any kind to second this important critical task. And at this point, I am faced with going to the organizations I belong to and publicize this, going to the Secretary of State and publicize this. I'm not telling the county because I'm still trying to work the things out. If they don't work it out, I will be, okay? I don't know what they're thinking of. In fact, when I asked the director to be close to the machines that they were putting the cards in, she said, you know, I can remove you. And I said, and the Secretary of State can overrule you. And she didn't want to do that, so I continued to do my job 20 feet away. But anyhow, I've been in working with many counties in the state doing public records inspections and stuff like that. And this county was like off the wall to me. Most of them are nice and gracious and cooperative and understand that you have a purpose of checking to make the public be confident in what's happening. And I can't make the public confident about this county. I'm working to get it so that they can be. But that's my job, is to observe and report back to the people that they're doing things honestly and properly, or they're really messing up. And I would prefer not to be getting into messing up fights. Okay, and one of the things that shocked me to pieces was I went into the director's room to talk to her about something, and she had 300 provisional ballot stuff in her house, her room, and no one was there with her, and she was deciding them by herself. It's just not acceptable. Well, anyhow, even do need observers because not all people and all boards do everything right. And in fact, probably everybody on a board at some point does something wrong because they're under tough conditions and there's 5 billion laws they have to deal with. But the whole situation of attitude towards observer that I have dealt with in this county was just utterly unacceptable. And I have, with all my legal experience, I know how to behave. And I, you know, because there's some judges that would like to remove you from a courtroom. So I know how to behave. There was nothing that I was doing that was wrong except asserting my rights. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. And let me just reiterate, and I appreciate people sharing their experiences. One of the goals coming out of this conference is ways we can improve the process. And what I would like to hear, if anyone would like to offer, would be a discussion maybe of some of the things that would improve the process from a board's perspective. For example, and if you all indulge me, I have 18 counties that I work with, counties as big as Franklin and as small as Noble and Morgan, which are two of the smallest counties in the state. Obviously, your smaller counties have significantly less resources than your bigger counties. We have counties that have Board of Election offices that are not much bigger than the area between this podium and this wall, and that would be Morgan County. How can we try to make sure that a law that is passed and is meant to be implemented by the General Assembly, or the General Assembly intends us as elections officials to administer it, how can we make sure when we're passing these laws that we take into account that not every board office has the same facilities? The speaker was talking about not being able to see memory cards being uploaded into the server. In some of my counties, and I don't want to pick on anyone, Hocking, for example, the room where they have their server is a former restroom in the county courthouse. And Hocking is not a wealthy county, and they try to do the best that they can. But literally, to fit observers in there would be interfering with the elections officials. There's just literally no room for them to stand there and upload the memory cards as they're being delivered and to allow observers to watch the entire process. I told Harrison County, another one of my counties, which again is a very small rural county, well, I guess you could always allow them to be suspended from the ceiling, because literally that is the only way you're going to fit observers in your office. Would anybody like to comment from a board's perspective on how can you accommodate observers while still trying to abide by the laws that are passed by our General Assembly and recognizing the public's inherent need to have a check, to have to make sure that the electoral process is free and fair and open? Yes, sir.
My name is Bill Herdman from Brown County. I'm chairman of the board there. And we find that educating our poll workers is so important. And we are a little bit different in Brown County, is that we board members are involved in the actual training process of our poll workers. Because our staff, we're understaffed. They have so much to do, so we've taken it upon ourselves to train our own poll workers. And this last election, we did something different. Previous years, we had a big open room. All the poll workers came in. We had about three sessions. And we spoke from a podium. And then afterwards, people had a chance to work the machine. This last time, we had it in a church where we had four classrooms, and each one of us board members took a portion of the training process. And so they would move from class to class. We trained 180 poll workers over a period of 3 days, and they loved it because there was an interaction within the room, just like we're doing here. It was just great. So with all that process, then And we also trained 28 high school students. The average age of our poll workers in Brown County is in the upper 70s. And with all the initiatives coming down from the Secretary of State's office, and we all know, what do we all have a book out there? It's becoming more difficult every year for these aged poll workers to assimilate all these directives and so forth. So that's where the training process comes in. But we have we reached the point where we were struggling the last hours before the election to find poll workers. So by bringing in high school students, 17 and 18 year olders, we trained 28 of them, and they in turn went into a pool. And actually this last election, we used 6 of them, and they were fabulous. The boards loved them, the poll workers loved them, and they did a great job. So in this process, I think that, and what you're referring to is, as far as observers are concerned, as a small county, we don't have the problem as the big counties do. But to me, it's educating our poll workers, and you can't educate them enough.
That's right.
After all, look, how it's years, a year or two will go by before you have a, 4 years go by before you have a major election, and then 2 years before you go to a governor's election, and they need to be, that they forget. And so forth. I think education is a major part of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Linda, you had a comment, I hear?
Well, I'd like to know, space is a problem. We were able to obtain additional space this year. We ended up being in 6 different buildings for everything. But we were luckier than a smaller county. But even so, the stress level by election night with the cards, and I don't know what happened there. Obviously, it wasn't right. But the stress level, it isn't so much that people want to hide anything, they're just so stressed. And anything additional in their way just totally shakes them up. But I was wondering if prior to election, if you knew what observers wanted to watch, if you could sit down with the observers and show them the facility you have to work in and say, this is what we have to work with. We want to help you do your job, but how can you help us? Where can you stand to be able to watch this so we can do this? I mean, if you're in a restroom, you don't have much room. So, would that be something that observers could meet with the board people and, show them what you have to work with and tell them your problems? Mm-hmm. You're a very intelligent woman. I'm sure you can help them help you.
And
if people can hear you, that's fine. Jeff, do you have a comment?
Yes, may we move on to item 2, please?
Sure. Let's talk now about standards of conduct.
Can I make a comment before you do that?
Sure.
I'm going to go along with what you said and what our legislators said yesterday at the luncheon. They need to go on the roadshow and see what the boards of elections look at before they make these laws.
Thank you. Let's move on now, at Jeff's request, to standards of conduct. And the second scenario was, the second topic for discussion is, do we need to change or enhance a code of conduct for observers? What role should observers have or not have in the elections process? What steps should be taken to permanently remove an observer, especially given the desire to have observers during early voting? And again, let's start with our panel. Linda, would you like to lead off on this one? Oh, you let Dora go first, okay.
I think that the Secretary of State, there's a balance here, okay? I mean, there's a balance of interest between what the boards need to make certain of in terms of ensuring that the election goes smoothly and that nobody interfere with it, and the observer's right to be there and do their job properly. And I thought that the Secretary of State's directive on this did a really good job of balancing those interests, recognizing both of them. And you know, if you wanted to turn her directive into statute and make those the codes of conduct that she announced in that directive statutory, I don't think I'd have a problem with that. I think that it's very fair and balanced. I do want to point out that one thing that we tried to do was develop a relationship with the boards of elections long before the election. We appointed what we called county liaisons, which were attorneys, in June. And they started meeting with boards of elections, with the director and the deputy director, in June to work out a plan and to try to figure out how that they were going to manage this and to explain our recruiting goals and the number of observers we plan to have and which precincts even we plan to try to place observers into. And the idea there was to develop a cooperative relationship early where we could iron out any of the kinds of problems that some of which we're hearing about today. And I think that that kind of planning and that kind of level of understanding and that kind of accountability is really, really important, so that you've got the phone number of somebody who is in charge of the observers in that county, so you being the board, so that if there are problems, you know who to call to correct them quickly. And if there are problems that we see at the polling location, we know who to call to correct them quickly. But I think that sort of developing that relationship early on so that we're working cooperatively would really help to avoid some of the problems that we're hearing about today.
Thanks, Dora. Linda?
I'd like to hear from some of the other counties as to what they think the rules should be. You coming up, Marilyn?
Marilyn, I see you standing up.
You know, we had an issue with cell phones and laptops and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, the voters are so, you know, they don't want somebody stealing their vote. You know, they want to use paper because they didn't trust the machine. They wanted to use the machine because their paper wouldn't count. And so if they see an observer standing trying to watch, they think that observer is trying to see how they vote. And we need, you know, there needs to be a happy medium there.
Well,
Marilyn?
Yes, thank you. Marilyn from Lorain County. And I'm interested to hear about the wonderful public service and so forth that the observers provided. I wish that's what we had gotten in Lorain County. The observers we had were the most disruptive and did more to hinder the election process in any election I've been involved in 17 years. First of all, they came in, they were well coordinated between the three groups so that they had a full complement. They also had others that called themselves outside observers. They were armed with the directive that spelled out all their rights and neglected to mention some of the board's rights. We were called, the director and I were called out all day long on election day with the county sheriff to put out problems. The poll workers were completely exasperated. They continued to tell us that they got their training from the Ohio Democrat Party and they were told they could assist voters with voting provisional. We had them grabbing paper ballots, tearing the stubs off, and handing them to people in line. I mean, we just had an absolutely awful situation with all the things that had to go on that day. This was the problem that we encountered. And we would have had a great election but for the observers. When we talk about the directive perhaps being incorporated into law, we had 14 pages that didn't mention they don't get to help voters. And I find it hard to believe that's an oversight, but they clearly don't have a right. Our poll workers have a right to help voters, not the observers. They can interact with the poll workers, but it wasn't their job to translate or to stand at the booth and mark the ballots for them or do any of the other things. And we had an absolutely awful situation, and I'm not sure how we're going to solve it, but I can guarantee you in 2010 in Lorain County, we'll remove them before we ever put up with this kind of a situation again. And they can take us to court the next day if that's what they choose to do. But we're not going to let our voters be hampered. And in many cases, they were trying to greet them and send them to polling places they didn't belong in. I mean, it was an awful service to the voters.
Okay.
So I would like comments on that. Clearly, that conduct needs to be changed.
I have a couple of comments. For some reason, there was a problem in Lorain County that we did not see in too many other counties, okay? And there were, I think, two observers that I had to make, before you guys even tried to remove them, I removed them, that I got calls about from the Secretary of State's office saying, mm-hmm. get rid of these people, and I did immediately. And I don't know why they were going off the reservation, I don't know what was happening, but I will say this.
Well, your county coordinator was part of the
problem. Jose Candelario came to our observer training. Mm-hmm. He was so impressed, and he had our observer manual. And by the way, we invited Board of Election directors and deputy directors to attend our trainings, okay? And he was so impressed by the materials that we were handing out and by the knowledge of our observers that he asked them to become poll workers. And a huge contingent of our observers from Lorain County changed over at observer training from being observers to being poll workers, which, by the way, left us with a huge deficit of observers in Lorain County. And perhaps that was part of the problem, that some of the best people ended up being poll workers and weren't observers. I don't know. It's unclear to me exactly, precisely, what happened.
I will say, with some of them, Jose did learn, and I don't want to speak for him, he's not in this session, but he and I together were at some of the polling places that were the worst. Mm-hmm. Some of the people that we used as polling places, he said, will never be in a polling place again because they did not transition from their role as an observer to being a poll worker employed by the Board of Elections. They continued to try to advocate the behavior that's simply not permitted. And
I don't know exactly the kind of behavior that you're talking about, I can't speak to that precisely. What I do know is that without any question, when there were complaints that came in, I pulled people I didn't even want to debate it, okay, to avoid the problem because I understood that in the storm and drum of the election, I can't argue on behalf of my observers at that point. I just need to allow the election to proceed. But I will say that in the vast majority of counties, we did not get reports like that. So something happened in Lorain that I don't believe was repeated in too many other places.
I also want to address one issue that Marilyn raised. And you know, it's an inherent problem that we always have at the Secretary of State's office. There's a statutory scheme that provides certain details, but it doesn't cover every detail. And what do we try to do? We try to fill in the blanks. We try to make it spelled out as clearly as possible and try to walk that line of making a balance between observers' rights to observe the process, which Ohio law clearly contemplates, and the board's rights to run a fair election. And the observer directive, which is 2008-29, is very long directive. But it's very long for a reason, and that reason is to try to spell things out as clearly as possible. And I will tell you, on page 13, under section E, it clearly says and defines watching and inspecting. It also says observers may never handle any elections material. The role of observers is limited to watching the proceedings of an election, although they may do so freely and move about to do so, unless otherwise restricted as stated elsewhere in this directive. So just want to make sure it's clear that we nowhere in the directive did it ever imply that observers could touch anything related to elections materials. If you had observers that were doing that, they should have been removed. They should have been warned once, and then if they did it again, removed.
All right, here's a question. Why should they even be warned once?
Well,
some of it was absolutely egregious behavior, and they threw the directive in our face and said, you can't remove anybody because we have all the rights, not you.
Well, again, it's trying to balance the constitutional, you know, right to openness in government with running a smooth election. And I mean, again, we're walking a tight line, and I understand. I fielded those calls, too, from the boards and would call where there were problems. And again, I do want to not to be patting anybody on the back. Dora did a very good job of trying to balance all that out. But the boards clearly have the right to remove people. Our fear is that we just give you an unmitigated right to immediately remove somebody without giving them a warning, is they're going to turn around and sue you, and then you're going to have to deal with a court order on election day. Well, I know it's easy to throw your hands up in the air, but how many court orders do we want dropping down, changing the rules of the game on election day? I think it's reasonable to give them one warning, and if they continue to exhibit that behavior, you have the power to remove them. It's a balancing act. I'm sorry?
Could you spell out what interaction you believe they're allowed to have with the voter?
I don't think they're allowed to have any interaction with
the
voter.
Thank you.
And nor did the directive imply that in any way. Those weren't authorized by us.
They should have had the outside observers were supposed to wear those signs outside of the 100-foot right, and I think that in some cases some of the inside observers got a hold of them and wore them too. When I found that out, I put out a call to tell them to take them off because that was not. Well, then, you know, I mean, that's again, it's like the communication to me. If I had, what county are you in?
Athens.
If, well, your relationship, but our county liaison was Paul Benedict, and he, right, and so he was supposed to be the one who was interfacing with you. You should have had his contact information. One call to Paul should have, right, one call, well, he should have gone out at that point. You know, if he had gotten the call, and I don't know whether he got that specific complaint, he should have gone out, he should have gone, you know, and he, because he was a Board of Election observer, had the right to go into any precinct. He could have gone in and collected the signs from, you know, the tags from people. I had 5,772 observers out there, right? And my best connection with them on election day were these county liaison who had a much closer relationship with them and who could physically get to them at any time because they were Board of Elections observers, right? The idea was, and obviously this didn't work, and this is the kind of thing that I need to know so that next time we can make sure that it happens. He should have gone out there and he should have gotten those back.
2 points I think are worth making at this point, and we don't have a lot of time left. One is, just like we as elections officials have trouble from time to time with problem poll workers, I think it's easy to cast a very wide net with observers. She trains these people just like you guys train your poll workers. Not everybody's going to pick up on all the details. Not everybody is going to follow the rules, just like your poll workers don't always follow the law. So I think that's a balance. The second issue is we have to also remember that there is no ability of any of us to regulate conduct outside the flags. Only law enforcement can regulate conduct outside the flags. Ma'am, you have a comment?
Yes, I do. I'm Joe Swain from Crawford County. I'm going to say some things that will be unpopular with some people in this room, but I think the whole election process is getting out of hand. I mean, observers. We have watchers watching watchers who watch the watchers, and as far as I know, the poll workers and the Board of Elections people take an oath very similar to the Secretary of State. They have been running elections to the best of their ability for many years. And I mean, as I understand the observer thing, every candidate can have an observer from each party. Every party can have an observer. Every group of five candidates can have an observer from each county. Every issue can have pro and con observers from each party. You could have this room full of observers and nobody could work. We're a small county with no room and we don't have a lot of observers, but it is possible under the law to have them. And I guess I fail to see why. We have honest, hardworking people trying to do a job, and we've made it absolutely the next thing to impossible with directives and advisories and new rules, and every legislator writing another law. And sometimes we train the poll workers, and between that training date and the election, which are fairly close proximity in our county, We've changed the rules again twice. And yes, are they going to make mistakes? Yes, they are. But I guess if a particular party wants to train people, ask them to get a list of the poll workers that we've assigned that are members of their party and let them train their poll workers their own way to say you can do this and you can't do that. But a room full of people watching, the watching could go on infinitely, and I think it's absurd.
Dora, I have a question for you. There is an oath that observers take,
and
it states that you do solemnly swear that you will faithfully and impartially discharge the duties of an official observer assigned by law, that you will not cause any delay to persons offering to vote, and you will not disclose or communicate to any person how any elector has voted at such election. I'm just wondering, how then do you use this oath to train observers? What part does that play in the training process?
Well, I mean, it's a critical part of the training process. I mean, we tell observers that they have obligations under the law both to represent the Democratic Party and to, you know, to carry out their statutory duties, and that they should be taken extremely seriously. And that's why I say I'll pull an observer even before, you know, even after just the first, even after the first warning, if I feel that that observer is in some way interfering with the process pursuant to that oath. So I take seriously my responsibility to make sure my observers are abiding by that oath. But I also just wanted to point out, in terms of the numbers, the statute does say that observers are limited to 6 per precinct. So I don't know how that will work out in terms of, you know, all of the different bodies that are allowed to appoint observers, but maybe it's a first come, first serve basis. But there is a limitation. There's a certain point at which you can't burden a precinct with more than 6.
Well, I think one of the concerns that we have is, why is it that issue groups get so many observers when the political parties only get one? And I mean, at least that's the way we look at the statute in terms of the directive, that for some reason the General Assembly allows issue groups to have many more precinct-based observers than the political parties, and yet they're not allowed any observers at the Board of Election Office, which, you know, that's an interesting, and we should be talking in the very few minutes we have left about what the law should be, but we have two speakers who've been patiently waiting, and I'm going to allow them to make their comments.
I'm
going to
be very quick. My name is Chantel Sader. I'm the manager of the Poll Worker Department in Cuyahoga County, and I think it's very unfortunate that we're hearing so many negative things about observers in this session. My experience with Dora and with all of the observers that we had was very positive. Although it wasn't as great in March, we learned from our mistakes that we had in March, and we invited Dora and several other individuals who organize observers to attend our training classes, and they did the same to us. And we made our presence known at the observer training classes, and I think that made a huge difference. I was introduced to observers, I shook their hands, I said we're all on the same team, and the atmosphere on election day was completely different than it was in March. And just by designating 30 minutes of our training class time to going over what observers do, what they can do and what they cannot do, and then also allowing us to speak at the observer trainings to make sure that everyone knows that in the grand scheme of things, we're all on the same side and we all want fair and accurate elections. So I do pat Dora on the back for, you know, all of her efforts and all the entire team that she had. We had a really good experience. And I just had a comment about the next question regarding changes. And it's very difficult for us to logistically manage the 4:30 deadline of change of names. So that would be something that we would like to see changed. You know, they can give a placeholder for a precinct, but then they have, I believe it's up to 4:30 on Monday.
Well, what you're saying is, and that's an interesting quirk of the law too, is anyone. This is the only statute that allows anyone to come into a polling place, and that's to check the 11 and 4 list. And otherwise, it's very restricted in terms of the law of who can come into a polling place. But does everybody know what we're talking about? The 11 and 4 list are posted of who has voted thus far in that day. And by law, anyone, there is no restriction on those people, can come in and check those lists. And maybe that's something that the legislature needs to look at is you know, how should we address that?
But you're talking about the last-minute amendments.
Sorry. Go ahead.
You know, the Democratic Party gave us a list of names of individuals who wanted to be observers in their precinct, but they could use the same person's name for all 1,436 precincts in Cuyahoga County, and then not update those names of actually who will be in those precincts until 4:30. Is it Monday before the election?
Yes.
The day before the election.
The day before the election.
Right, right.
And
okay.
We were trying to personalize packets for observers so they felt like you know, we cared about who they were, and it was very difficult to do when, you know, we got hundreds and hundreds of changes at 4:30. The day before the election.
And sorry that I was misunderstanding what you were saying. And that's a big question we get in our office is when they get the flood of the observer updates the day before the election, how do they deal with that? You know, a common question is can they appoint somebody to a precinct that's never had somebody before in terms of the appointment? And that is a problem. I mean, I understand on one hand they want to give the parties time to identify people. On the other hand, it is a lot for you to have to deal with 4:30 the day before election day. We have another comment or question.
Hi, I'm Mary Jean Donofrio from Summit County. We did not have a very good experience with observers in the November election. The one that we had at the board came in with the attitude of, you know, the eye of God and I'm out to get you. And when he came in, we talked. I gave him a designated area that he could work out of. They had a boiler room of phone calls that were coming into him, and then he would find me. He would just walk into my office, whether I was on the phone or whatever. I had people in there. And then when I finally told him he could not come back there, he could let someone know and I would come out. He was on the phone with his people and our staff saying that he was not allowed to go into Mary Jean's forbidden castle or something to that effect. We also had problems with observers sitting with our poll workers in the precincts, helping them conduct voting business. We did have observers that did wear the Ask Me, I mean, and that was all over the county. And the other thing, I like the idea of having a designated person to work with the observer in flooding the influx of calls coming in with problems instead of the director, because that took up my entire day. And I did not get anything. Did you say you had training of observers and invited board staff to do that?
Yeah, I mean, and that was left up to the county liaisons to do, and it sounds like your county Nancy Holland.
That would be good, because, I mean, we are all working together for the same thing, and I think we need to lose that perception that the observers are out to get us. And we do take painstaking time in training our poll workers, but a lot of times after the training has occurred, we do get last minute directives changing things, and we're trying to get that information out to our poll workers by, you know, we'll run sheets of, you know, things on the computer and put them in their packets, and it's just we're all on the same game table, and but yet it's like we're working against each other and trying to